Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the weekly show after the Tour de Romandie. We've got a packed schedule as usual with loads of extension announcements dropping in, particularly for the GC riders. Is Arnaud Delis back? DSM dominating in Tour of Turkey. La Vuelta Femenina kicks off, as well as some injury updates, TDFF wildcards, and Demi Vollering signing a somewhat surprising endorsement signing as well. But Romandie, Benji, this is the race we've somewhat disparaged. We did say in last week's weekly show that the start list was really, really good. How much pressure were we under after the prologue, the most technical prologue ever to do a pod, when Michael Szilard won, which is Luke's favorite rider?
I have to be honest, I was looking at the likes under that last podcast because we said 3,000 likes, I think, and it got close, but the problem is it didn't get there. You didn't get there, so I'm sorry, but the rules are the rules, and unfortunately, no daily recaps for Roman, even though I low-key wanted to do so. looking at the race itself, why is that start list so huge? It's like, is it not because, for example, last year you see the one-week races in World Tour being dominated by Jonas Vingegaard and Tadej Pogacar, to the point that these other riders, like the Ineos of the world, like the rest of the pack, the second degree leaders at UAE, Yates, Simon Yates, whatever, those kind of riders are then thinking, okay, I can't win Tirreno most likely if Pogacar shows up, so I'm going to show up to a on paper lesser 1 week race to have a chance at winning a GC. Is that a theory?
Yeah, and there's also like Adam Yates missed some racing. Maybe he wasn't going to do this, maybe he was going to do it, and so he's trying to catch up on some racing because of his injury or concussion. But yeah, really, really good start list. Although I would say that Ayuso, I don't know if he's over-raced, but he wasn't as good as he was in Tirreno, that's for sure. Yeah. Same with Hindley, so some guys didn't actually perform as good as maybe the start list said. But yeah, opening stage, Szilard wins his first ever pro win, and then he crashed the next day, unfortunately. He's one of the best lead-out riders in the world, actually. I dare say,
yep.
But yeah, that was very, very technical. Specialist, that was an interesting stage. Stage one, Dorian Godon won a small sprint in dominant fashion. He was supposed to be leading out his teammate Vendrame, but that order's not correct. And it looked like everyone thought there was another 200 meters left in the sprint. Very sort of,
yeah
classic Romandy sprint. Stage two to Freiburg. This was a very interesting stage, Benji, with an easy stage, then a 20-minute, 7.5% mountaintop finish. Breakaway of Vendrame, Nais, Ruja, Adria, can't remember who else. Peloton, everyone thought UAE was going to chase for Ayuso.
Mm-hmm.
And UAE didn't chase.
Exactly. They didn't come to the front necessarily. And on the climb itself, you saw that passiveness from the peloton, which then offers opportunities for others to still come back. Like, the tempo in the peloton was still existent, so they were still somewhat rolling along to the point that they were in reach of the stage when on the last climb. But the problem is, if no one keeps on hitting that in the peloton, then the breakaway can keep that gap as long as possible, and then they might have a chance for the victory until we get an attack from the peloton, including Luke Plapp and now-known German rider Florian Lipowitz. Plapp gets to the breakaway, and I gotta be honest, he rides at the front for GC because he had lost some time in the prologue. And in reality, he blew himself doing that, to the point that he helped the breakaway survive. And it was a sprint between Vendrame and Thibaut Nys, and Thibaut Nys cleans that. So first breakaway for Thibaut Nys in his career, first breakaway victory for Thibaut Nys in his career. And it's a mountain stage victory, which let's be honest about it. It's not necessarily the victory I was expecting to when I used to get in this race. I was rooting for him to see potentially a win in a reduced sprint, you know? But his positioning there seemed a bit off.
Yeah, exactly. He was the best on this finish. Somewhat so. Like, it was a 20 minutes at 7.5% average. Yeah, he climbed really, really well. Climbed over 6 watts per kilo. Now, this was an easy stage. It was perfect conditions for high watts per kilo from everybody because it's an easy stage before. It's steady climb at mm-hmm. a decent gradient, 7 to 9%. It starts from low altitude, finishes at lowish altitude. It's paced consistently. Plap, really, really impressive performance from Plap. Like, I think he did, over 6.4 if you do Edlon to 60 kilos, over 6.5 watts per kilo if you do 60 kilo Edlon. And he was really, really good fresh. And he finds these moments. I think Simon Yates softened the group up, and then Plap is like, he goes in these moments where he can do his own TT ahead of the peloton.
But talking about TTs, then the day after we see Brandon McNulty winning the IGT.
Just on Bora.
Okay.
Just remember, Plap drops Lipovitz.
Yeah.
We don't get shown the GC group. Vlasov and Ayuso, there's no real chase on the front. They miss out on bonus seconds because Vendrame, Plap, and Nace take the bonus seconds. Vlasov was co-favorite for this uphill sprint. He's very good with Ayuso. Just remember, Vlasov, no bonies, could have taken bonies. Lipovitz sat in a Shaspatat.
I wanted to talk about the fact that while McNulty wins that next time trial and Ayuso becomes the new leader in the Stage 3 ITT, Plap's time trials in this Romandy were horrible. Like, they were not good. I think he was one of the last people in the prologue. Yes, he came back from being off the bike for a while, directly into like a 2-minute all-out effort in that prologue, but also in the Stage 3 ITT, not a great result there, to the point that him riding for GC seconds on that mountain stage, like, it's irrelevant at that point, you know? It's like, if you lose that much time on the TTs, then you won't get there. So what do you think is the reason? Because I swear Giant just switched from rim brake TT bikes to disc brake TT bikes as like one of the last brands to do that, so I swear. Because I swear every other brand had already had disc brake TT bikes. But Plap was on disc brake ones now, but that's usually a positive influence. So it seems like his TT just wasn't good.
Yeah, his TT, he said he stuffed the warm-up up the next day. I don't know if that meant he went too hard or not hard enough in the cool conditions. Mm-hmm. It did start raining, but then it also rained for Ayuso, who the rain definitely affected. I don't know. Like, it is uphill at the start with a climb. Would he prefer a flat TT? He's done good TTs in Australia. I think he's done other good, maybe in U23 he did a good TT in World Champs. So he should be, because like, if he's, I don't know, 70 mm-hmm. kilos, does that climbing performance on a 20-minute climb the day before and can gap the peloton to huge watts per kilo, this is exactly 20-minute TT effort. Just doing like 2+2, it should mean he does a really good TT. Now, I accept it's not a flat TT. There's coasting in the descent. You got to go faster on the climb. But still, as you said, losing 1 minute and being beaten by Yannis Wozzard, that was surprising.
Collateral damage for Yannis Wozzard.
Yeah, but I mean, that guy is he a good time trialist?
Not really. He's a relatively okay climber, though, a solid climber.
Yeah, he's like 56 kegs. Good performances from Carlos Rodriguez. Now, Ayuso's the best of the guys in the wet conditions, and he beats Rodriguez only, though, by 7 seconds. So C-Rod, I think, absolutely sent the descent. I see that guy in Andorra, man. If it's raining, he'll be out there training, which is... He crashes as well a fair bit, but he also, like, he's good in... he can go quick downhill. Carlos Rodriguez, and he's good in the rain. Vlasov also good TT, but yeah, it's McNulty wins another World Tour race. He won the UA Tour ITT as well this year, so he's having a really good TT year. Chef also a good TT. The GC, though, going into the Stage 4 uphill finish or mountaintop finish in the hardest Queen stage, the GC was Ayuso leading by a slender margin, 7 seconds on Van Vilder, 10 on Vlasov, 11 on C-Rod, and 32 on Lipovitz, so all to play for. And then Ineos Benji came out and whacked it
Yeah, Ethan Hayter at the front, being a mountain domestique with about, let's say, already at 60k to go. Is that correct? Roughly?
Yeah, if not earlier.
He was helping the team in that sense. And I'm looking at that classification, and we see Ayuso being the leader. So on paper, the attacks ain't going to come from UAE side necessarily. So it's on Ineos and on Bora to really try and make sure shit hits the fan on these climbs. And Ineos was the one to try and force it on the final climb. And they do have those multiple leaders. Eh? Bernal's still here. Bernal's still roughly within the sphere of GC at this point. So Bernal can make moves, which then puts other people into pressure. And the notable move in this race was, to me, Bernal attacks. And we see a response with Sivakov pacing Ayuso. And Ayuso starts crumbling. And I think you mentioned this on Twitter as well. The response of Carlos Rodriguez attacking towards Bernal because he sees Ayuso crumbling. Some people might have said, oh, he's attacking his own teammate or is chasing down his own teammate. But what was your take on that?
Well, because, yeah, it looks sort of bad, but actually, I was worried what Ineos would do would be to attack with Bernal.
Mm-hmm.
UAE, what they should have done is don't react, because there's a gap on GC and Sivakov overreacts, and then you slow pace 20 seconds, 15 seconds behind Bernal. And then, especially if Ayuso has communicated before, he doesn't feel that good. But what happens is, as soon as Sivakov tries to get straight to the wheel of Bernal, and Ayuso's on a gap, Ciro's like, he's fucked. And he does exactly the right thing. Like, he goes, and Bernal said it on Instagram afterwards, Carlos was the leader. And then so Carlos goes across, Bernal's experience, and Bernal just slaps it for like 3 minutes to really put the hurt into Ayuso. And then when the attacks start, Ayuso is even more cooked. Really, really hard stage. Like, one of the most intense 140K stages. The way Ineos paced, incredibly impressive. Fatigue they brought in. So really, really impressive from Ineos, and aggressive as well to go for it. The funny thing was, though, C-Rod didn't just ride away. Lipovic actually opened it up.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Bora is a double-edged sword here. Bora in this race could have won GC easily. Easily. Yep. Not just on this day, but on this day as well. You have option A. Lipovic fully chained to Vlasov. He just goes to the front, starts pacing, and Ayuso will probably drop, and Vlasov was much stronger than Ayuso, and he takes bonies. Option B, Lipovic attacks solo and really goes for it to take time on Ayuso and try and drop the rest. They went with option C, Benji. Lipovic goes, keeps Vlasov 5 to 7 seconds behind, but then sits on Rodriguez, then Carapaz attacks, is back. And Lipovic doesn't respond and just sits in the wheel, but doesn't drop back to pace Vlasov.
Yeah. It's kind of the we let the race happen to us strategy.
Yeah.
Without taking initiative, to the point that you end up losing on valuable seconds, which might indeed cost them GC at this point, because you already mentioned on stage two on the mountain stage, passive Bora. Here, initially, offensive Bora with Lipovic, which I like the idea that they're using two leaders and they're using Lipovic to attack and then Vlasov behind, stuff like that. I'm okay with that happening. But you got to pull through with that then. And the second that he can't follow or he doesn't choose to follow Carapaz, because later he actually does make a move, right? Because like towards
the
end,
didn't know what to do. He's on the radio.
Yeah.
And then it's too late. And then he attacks Rodriguez and Vlasov's coming back with Mas, and he gets across and he doesn't quite catch. If he jumped 30 seconds earlier, he wins the stage.
Yep.
He takes an extra 4 bonies. So Lipovic could have won GC. They need to pick one. Okay, yep. Florian, go full gas, go for your own GC. He probably wins GC because he finishes, he's then 9 seconds behind Rodriguez in GC, and he would have had extra bonies, and maybe he takes the 5 on the road. Option B, wait for Vlasov, pace him back. Vlasov takes bonies on Rodriguez, and Vlasov started the stage ahead of Rodriguez. It doesn't matter which way you want to go. It's also, you can say, well, you don't want to change, you don't want to chain your young guy having his best career performance to pace Vlasov back. That's way too negative. I agree. But then you got to let him off the leash. And as I said, Vlasov could have taken the bonus on stage two. But in the end, Rodriguez just hangs on to reward Ineos' work. Carapaz wins the stage. Rodriguez goes in the GC lead, 7 seconds ahead of Vlasov, 9 seconds ahead of Lipovits. Lipovits, by the way, on the next stage was a messy classic Romandy stage. It's like, looks like a sprint stage, but it was actually really hilly. Ineos had a big wobble, 20 to 25 Ks to go. They looked like they were nowhere. Ayuso starts attacking, but it looked like the rest of the GC riders were not really interested in changing positions, and Dorian got on, dust everyone on the sprint. But Lipovits extension, Benji, Bora announced that with the Hindley extension. They must have known something. They must have seen something in his data in the last month on the training camp.
Sorry, but still, the fact that Hindley and Lipovits are being announced in the same tweet from a social media standpoint, I find that stupid. That being said, Lipovits being extended, I'm okay with that.
Jonas Vingegaard and Stan Mitten have been extended in the same tweet. Or the Sepp Kuss extension. Sepp Kuss has been extended. Like, yeah.
Sepp Kuss and Julian Vermont have been extended.
Yeah, maybe two different ones next time for the guy who won the first Grand Tour for the team.
But we got to talk about these riders for a second. Like, there's a few things I want to talk about Tour Romandy. There's a few topics in here. And the first one, let's continue where we were at. Florian Lipovits. The first time we spoke about Lipovits was in 2021 during the Tour of the Alps when he came 18th, which initially we thought, okay, this guy might actually become a future rider that we have to look at, but I felt like he disappeared a little, and he combined biathlon, I think, together with cycling. Now, biathlon, that's, if my memory serves me right, 50% cross-country skiing. Is that correct?
Isn't it shooting guns and stuff in the snow?
The shooting guns, and the other 50% is cross-country skiing. So cross-country skiing sounds like kind of the kind of sport where we've seen a few of those enter the sport of cycling and be successful, is how I perceive it. So it seems like a very not necessarily similar sport, but one that uses the same kind of physiological aspects of a human.
I want to see him against Tiberi, brother.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Maybe Tiberi should go to biathlon.
I actually think he would be really successful. But the problem is he still as successful if the bullseye is not a cat?
Not a San Marinese cat owned by by one of the ministers of the government. I don't know. He must. I mean, if you do that in Andorra, man, you're getting booted.
Yeah.
I mean, most countries, I think.
I fucking hope so.
Yeah. If you're... anyway, not to rehash that. But yeah, Lipovits... I mean, yeah, I thought he would be a good rider, Benji, like a solid rider, but this is a big step up to where he was in, like, even last year when he was doing really nicely in the back end of the year in summer.
Yeah, I swear, was it, I don't remember which race it was. Was it Tour of Turkey where he was really good at, or am I stupid?
He wasn't really, like, Czech Tour he won, okay, but he beat Per Strand Hagenes, who's a classics prospect, by 2 seconds in the mountaintop finish. Balyalak, he was solid. In Sibiu Tour, and then Turkey, he was solid, but yeah, he got beaten by Zvihoff and on Babadag. Like he wasn't winning them. And this is a big step up. Don't know if he's lost weight.
It is,
or just got he's 23 years old. This is normal. It's normal for guys to progress and not be. This is what always used to happen, Benji. Like no one would used to come in as a neo pro. And just smoke everybody. Yep. It's a steady progression from a talented guy physiologically.
It's nice that Bora is extending him. It's nice to see Hindley extending for 2025. Let's get that news out of the way as well. Happened as well this week. And I'm very curious where this will go in the coming weeks. Lipovits is going to the Giro d'Italia. So when it comes to GC, I'm very curious how that will happen. We're going to have our Giro preview on...
Dropping Wednesday, let's say. Some of the teams are usually announced fairly late for the Giro, but they're rolling in today.
Because he might actually be one of the GC hopefuls then for Bora after this revelation.
Well, where's Martinez?
In Tour de Romandie. Yep, Martinez is there as well, but that combination could do something. That aside, am I worried about Juan Ayuso? And I don't know, because when he first podium to Vuelta in 2022 is my, I think.
22.
I was like, okay, this guy is hitting it directly on the podium. Feels very Pogacar-like. He also initially on 2019 Vuelta podium directly. This is that felt similar. But I do feel like despite the great performances in Tour de Suisse and Romania and so forth that we've seen from this man in the past, there's a bit of a stagnation that he hasn't shot towards the absolute top, which is difficult, obviously. Like, sorry, but it's not that easy to start being competitive against Pogacar and so forth, but I would have expected him to have been more consistent against the likes of Carlos Rodriguez, against that level of competition. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he didn't take a big, like, this is, and this is also back to the context of Angleroo, and this actually provides context to the shit show on Angleroo with Visma. Everyone thought, well, not everyone, but I was concerned that Ayuso could, he's such a super talent. I expected more of him in that third week of the Vuelta. Mm-hmm. And he went into that Angleroo stage not far off the other riders.
Yeah.
And then I think that third week of the Vuelta is really where he was like, oh, like he really got, he wasn't even like Landa dropped him, you know? It's not just that Visma beat him, he was also getting dropped by other guys. So the third week of the Vuelta, he didn't take that step up where Pogacar did. But he's 21 years old. His whole winter was ruined last season by his injury. He's being sent to hard races. He's done Tirreno, Basque, Romandy. Second in Tirreno, he was the best behind Vingegaard. You can't do more than that. Like, that's fine. Basque, he won. Would he have won if the guys didn't crash? We don't know. I personally don't think so, based on his level in the... But that's by the by. He won. And then Romandy, he definitely... Romandy, the numbers, he's not as good. So in my opinion, they've raced him too much. And this is not the preparation for the Tour. He should have rested and not done the Ardennes, and he should have rested altitude Dauphiné, altitude Tour.
I probably agree with you. There's also the devil's advocate take of he spoke before Romandy about the fact that Flesch really hit him hard, which ruined his Ardennes, to the point that he still didn't feel good about it going into Romandy, which is an interesting thing. But then I'm also wondering, like, why ride that race then? As in, are you riding Romandy as like, oh, let's see if I can get back in form through this race? Because you can also do that by not riding Romandy.
UCI points.
Yeah. Well, they've got enough, man. Like, sorry, but you can give a guy
that's,
a break.
But that's what I don't understand about the points. Like, it's like the fight's over. The guys on the, everyone else on the canvas, six rounds in, knocked out. UAE are winning the UCI. Yeah, they could take a month off, two months off.
It was expected before the season.
Yeah, like, but the gap is huge. There's no need. They'll do it by default. So I agree. Like, but that's 2020 hindsight. Maybe he comes to Romandy and wins, and but he comes fifth. But I agree. Like, I still think. I mean, listen, the guy's 1800 UCI points by the end of April. 21 years
He's
old.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think I'm not worried about one of you. So I think with a different preparation, he was really.
We just spoke about Lipovic, who is on paper not one of those like generational masterclass talents that just shows up and beats everyone in the U23 ranking like Ayuso did. And he had basically a year and a half, Lipovic, where he wasn't performing at that super level to the point that we were like starting to doubt whether he would show what he is showing now, because he made a major step up. And like, it can be that Ayuso suddenly has the click of like, okay, now consistency across the board, stuff like that. Maybe it was Flesch, as simple as that. Maybe Flesch just hit him that hard that he still fucked from it. But
once Pogacar improved from 2021 to now. So like,
yes, but
Van der Poel improved.
Pogacar is a special guy because he improved from winning the Tour.
Yeah, exactly. He's already pretty good, no?
Yeah, true.
But Lipovic is a great success story. It's like, okay, if you have the most money and you sign the best riders from NeoPros and then they're good, I mean, congrats to you. It's still not easy, actually, to do that. Like, what UAE are doing with Del Toro and the others is not easy or a guarantee. That being said, it's also nice to see Bora taking a different, taking a guy from a different sport, progressing him slowly, getting the rewards for that, then extending him. Yeah, of course they have money, but the reason Bora had Lipovic is not because they had the most money at the time. No. So, like, you know, really hats off to them. It's nice to see that sort of progression. We should speak about Rodriguez and Ineos.
Yes, we should. Because, like, a few weeks ago, we were honestly worried about Ineos because their will to wins were not coming in. Like, across the board, zero will to wins. And then it started hitting. And we've now gotten a few will to wins in, Pidcock and Silvov winning Amstel. And we've now arrived at GC victory for Carlos Rodriguez. Yes, he did win the Queen stage, but that doesn't matter if you win the GC. And Rodriguez winning this, I swear, Rodriguez's progression in the sport has been one of the most enjoyable journeys across the last few years that I feel like I've followed. Because I swear for the first few years at Ineos, I was always looking at Vuelta a Burgos, Lagunas de Naya, and every year he had a better results on that climb compared to the year before. To the point that we last year then had, was it Valenciana? It was
know.
A Spanish race.
Valenciana for Rodriguez. He probably did it. He's or Andalusia.
It was, I don't actually remember which race it was. He was fourth in Andalusia.
Yeah.
I vividly recall enjoying his performances there. Then we had the
El León de Almuñécar.
Is that his nickname?
I think that's not even, I didn't even make that up. I'm pretty sure that's his official nickname. Let me see if I got the town right.
What a nickname. Jesus Christ.
I know, I can't the Spanish guys. El León de Almuñécar. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Almuñécar's lion.
That's pretty cool.
The Hispanophones always have the sickest nicknames.
I was but 2 years ago that he got third in Valenciana, by the way.
But who is he? Is he just a pure GC guy that's good on hard stages?
He's not a sprinter. He's not a DT.
Dude, he has
god.
A 500. He can't even attack. It's crazy. Like, he's legit pure diesel. Like, he's got like a 500 watt cap.
The thing about Carlos Rodriguez is that his ascending's fucking good. You mentioned already this podcast. His climbing's good, arguably very good compared to most of the peloton, but it's not at the level yet where he can compete with the higher ups on a one-off every now and then. So I'm seeing him as he's just a podium candidate for the tour, eh?
I mean, just a podium candidate for the tour is not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad, eh?
But bear in mind, they nearly lost this guy because they didn't extend him properly. But they didn't. They re-signed him and they're getting the rewards. And that was a fantastic team performance from Ineos. Like, from start of that stage to the end, pacing like that, the attack with Bernal. Maybe credit to Bernal as the road captain. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was just, I really enjoyed it, actually. And I really, to see Rodriguez win was fantastic.
And what I like the most is that yearly progression, like getting fifth at the tour. I believe that he's going to have a better result at the tour this year. Because every year he progresses, there's probably going to be a limit. At a certain point, you got to hit a ceiling at some point. But I don't think he's reached that ceiling yet. There's areas he can still improve.
He's 23 years old.
So I'm looking forward to see what this guy has to offer. I'm looking forward to what he does at the Tour de France, but we won't see him too much more before the Tour de France, probably, if I'm guessing.
Yeah, like 23 years old, Vingegaard, his best World Tour GC result was 26th in Polonia that season, 9th in Deutschland.
Yeah, like, he was much later into World Tour though, through Colloquy.
Yeah, okay, but I don't think Vingegaard, okay, everyone's like, he was a fishmonger. Yeah, but he was training, like, he wasn't just fucking around playing video games.
No.
When he was 17.
He wasn't
17.
Fucking around.
Yeah,
he
was still training.
Yeah,
but I just say, like, guys can improve from, like, Rodriguez. He can keep getting better. Now, as you say, do I expect him to suddenly climb with Jonas with Jonas and Poggi on Puy Marie? No.
I agree, but I also see there is more of a limit. Because Vingegaard entering at a later phase into World Tour means that he also gets that upgrade of a new environment, a World Tour environment, that World Tour support at a later age. While Rodriguez had this from the age of 18, so the gradual progression is there. True. But it's unlikely that he's going to have that boom. He's now riding 100 watts more per climb.
Yeah, he did his first altitude camp. You know, like, it's not going to be stuff like that. Like, he never did an altitude camp before. He's probably been doing it for 4 years.
Yeah.
I agree. But still, very, very nice to see his progression, and I can't wait to see him at the probably do the Dauphiné Tour. That's Romandy. Lots of storylines. Was a very nice race. The best Romandy I've watched ever.
Ever.
UAE went to Asturias with Del Toro, and they dominated. They won all three stages, first with Del Toro, then with Morgado from a reduced sprint, then Fisher Black on the last stage. Shout out to my boy Seb Berwick. Actually, on the last stage, on the last climb, he's the group of four, him, Fagundes, Del Toro, and Micah, he said, and the rest came back in the descent. So Berwick is cooking, just to let you know. He was there with Del Toro.
Del Toro also cooking, because he not only won that stage, but he also was the lead out for Morgado and Fisher Black in their victories, which I really like a leader that also gives back in the race. And in races like Asturias, you can afford to do that. You're not risking anything by doing that. And like you said, it's not, yes, UAE has the money to get these talents from a young age that other teams are fighting for but can't afford. But also, like you say, it's not that easy to actually make it work then, because every now and then we see one of those talents that doesn't make it true because he might not have the support, the necessary support. But also, Del Toro's not... I say Del Toro is not coming from a European roots, which also makes it that him moving from where he lived in the past towards now living a more European-centric life, those adjustments for a cyclist can or for a human can also affect their professional lifestyle. So that's also one of the areas where UAE... What, sorry?
Look at Alejandro Osorio on Bahrain.
Yep.
Disaster.
Yep. Hey, at least he didn't shoot a cat.
Yeah, true. Well, I mean, it was worse. He's not in World Tour anymore.
Wow.
For him, it's worse. But yeah, it's like fair. The integration and matching gets these guys in, and it's not to have them all performing like this. They're all performing. Morgado and Finn Fisher Black is performing really, really well.
Yeah, but the day Morgado doesn't perform is the day he doesn't have a mustache. Like, generally, I think that mustache gives him the odds.
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, that guy looks so old.
I feel like every time I see a picture of Morgado, he's staring into the depths of the shadow realm.
I've never seen that guy crack a smile.
Every race he goes through in Flanders, he's like, I don't like Flanders.
He's like, I fucking hate classics.
And then he gets fifth in RV.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. But yeah, UAE, they won Asturias. Del Toro was scared to go to the sprint with Berwick. That's fine, I guess. Well, he was. He waited for Finn.
Yeah, and Finn won the stage, so.
Yeah, yeah. It was the right thing to do, I guess.
Del Toro would have won anyway, to be honest. In my opinion.
Maybe.
Sorry, maybe. Seb.
Yeah, maybe. Arnaud Delis, he's back, wins the famine, the Lotto famine, Ardennes Classics, suspiciously sounds like Lotto Farming Classic. Farming some points over here. He recovered from his Lyme disease. Oh, I can't make a joke. Can I crack a joke or not?
Yeah,
is it
can.
Play on? Okay, his Lyme disease doesn't, if it's not a World Tour race, the Lyme disease doesn't affect him.
Like, regardless of the Lyme disease, this victory was also something he mentally needed, I believe.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he's been in a drought of, yes, he's also young, like, we're not hitting these youngsters down because they're not winning, but Arnaud Delis personally probably needed a victory at this point, and winning a race like this, even though it's a 1.1 race, if I recall, even though it's against Axel Zangler and so forth, and his own teammate coming third, it's still a victory that he required. And I hope for him that kicked, and also for us, because he's fucking entertaining to watch, because half of the races he wins on one leg. Remember last year? This was the race he won on one leg, the Lotto Farming Classic.
Really?
Like, literally on one leg.
I thought it was later in the year last year.
I don't know, but I checked back and it was this one. But
you're right, it was in October last year. They moved it up. They needed to get him a win.
I'm not super confident in the lead at the Tour de France. Because I look at the Tour de France, pure sprints, he ain't going to do it. So he needs to do it from
gravel stage.
A reduced stage, a breakaway vibe. Like,
there's not many of them. There's not many of those. Last year, there was two in a row, stage 18, 19. There actually isn't many of those
roulette style stages this year.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like Binyam Tour de France last year.
Binny's a better bunch sprinter, honestly, and he has his own problems in bunch sprints, and Delis are worse, so I agree. But anyway, it's his first win of 2024. You're right, he needed it. Lotto's team was very, very strong. Maxim Van Gils, Raul just put an article up on LanternRouge.com this morning. Maxim Van Gils, at the time of writing, was the sixth highest point scorer in World Tour. Maxim Van Gils, yes, dude. He has 1,680 UCI points. He has top seven every one-day race he's done, except for Amstel Gold, where he was 20th. He's seventh in San Remo, third in Strada, third in Flèche, fourth in Liège. This guy is an elite one-day racer. Elite one-day racer. No, he's not Pogacar, but man.
To the point that I believe if Van Gils rode RVV this year, he would have top 10 easily.
I think so, yeah. He's good in the shit weather. He can position
in the
himself.
Hard ones.
Yeah. I agree with you. You know, he looks like, to me, he looks like a sort of upgraded Benoit.
I'm thinking about the analogy and I'm trying to figure out which rider I would compare him to, and I can't really figure one out. I'll think about it. Benoit, I don't see it yet.
His sprint must be okay.
Yeah, he won against Vlasov in that Mallorcan challenge, no?
No.
Was it
Saudi
stage? Am I drunk?
No, he never won a sprint.
Was Van Aertveld. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, it was Van Aertveld. But then you see him yesterday, and Zangler went way too early. Actually, Van Gils and Delis were sprinting against each other, and Delis actually closed Van Gils to get to Zangler's wheel. But Van Gils beat Riley Sheehan and Hofstetter. Okay, yeah. He has a little bit of an uphill drag, but he can sprint. So
he's got a sprint.
He will win races in sprints.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zangler looking good. Riley Sheehan, he's just a good rider. I can see he did the Tour de Brisbane on PCS. If Riley listens to the podcast, I need that to be explained. After Roubaix, he went to Brisbane. I don't understand. Tour de Brisbane is like it's a national like race for like club and Conti guys in Australia, Benji. I don't know. I saw it on his PCS. I was like, what the hell? So I need that to be explained to me. If he has a girlfriend there, is he traveling or what?
For the Denver Disruptors, is that
as his NCL team?
NCL team?
I think so. It doesn't make any sense. DSM dominated the Tour of Turkey. They won with Jakobsen. Tobias Lund Andersen won three stages, and Frank Vandenbroek won the mountaintop finish, which also meant he won GC after Paul Double was very generous, pulling the YOLO rider. Kanter also won his first race in his career, stage two sprint, and Lonardi won stage three after Van Poppel was disqualified. So there was like six sprints. Stage 8 got cancelled because it was wet in Istanbul, I think. And Benji, you have a story on Frank Vandenbroek.
Yeah. So I've got roots in Pro Cycling Manager, as most of you might know at this point, to the point that I've been in communities that were players of Pro Cycling Manager. And one of those communities was like a Dutch community on Skype back in 2015, something like that, 2015, 2016. And the likes of Noah Van Putten, who tends to post like these stories about the iceberg stuff on Twitter, where he delves old stories out of cycling and posts them on Twitter. But also there was a guy called Kast 2001 with a C at the start. And he's got a YouTube channel where he posts vlogs of his races locally in the Netherlands. And I swear I've seen loads of those, to the point that a lot of them included Frank van den Broek between 2019 and 2023, riding local races in the Netherlands. So if you're curious in Frank van den Broek's history, there's like plenty of like storylines there where it's really interesting to see how he progressed since then. Because I swear, initially this year, I was thinking, okay, this guy, okay, he looks like a rouleur, bit of a classic type, but then he's winning mountain stages, and I'm like, okay, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Where's the limit?
Just let's hope he's not like his namesake in the end. But hopefully he has his talent.
Frank Vandenbroek. But yeah, he looks really, really good, and they've got him locked up, I think, DSM for ages. He was good in the, if you went and watched the Dutch National Championships last year, you'll see two riders who might be now familiar to you in that selection. Frank Vandenbroek was one of them, actually, being quite aggressive in that move, and he signed to the end of 26. And also Bart Lemon was there, and maybe that's where he got noticed too. So I can't wait to see him. Paul Dubbel's a curious one. So Paul Dubbel's a 27-year-old kind of a journeyman around the Italian club scene. Yeah. He was on Human Powered Health, and then Human Powered Health collapsed, and then he got a lifeline at Polti Cometa. He's their best rider, just about. He's got he's climbing really, really. Yeah, Pignazzoli, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, más o menos. And he came third in GC here, so Dot Pro race. He's climbing very, very well. He was good on Prati di Tivo in Abruzzo, but they announced their Giro team. He's not in it. If I could just look down, which is just insane. Like, if they don't take him to the Giro for some other, like, Andrea Petrobon, like, then what the fuck are they thinking? But I guess he's not Italian. But yeah, he should be in their Giro team. If they don't take him, they're shooting themselves in the foot. He's a really good climber. And I think he deserves a shot on a World Tour team, to be honest. That's all. And it's good to see Kudus on Terengganu being good after he bounced out of World Tour. He was second on the stage. Frank Vandenbroek beat him in the sprint.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
La Vuelta Femenina started yesterday. It had a team time trial. Trek, very dramatic. They crashed in the final corner. They were going to win easily. They were going to win by like 15, 17 seconds. Van Dijk crashes and then holds up Rigolini and Spratt and Deignan. Chapman and Longaborghini are two riders ahead. They have to wait because you need to cross the line with four, and then Rigolini catches up with them. They still win by 0.02 seconds. I mean, that's the closest margin of victory I've seen in a long time. Van Dijk can continue, but super, very exciting. The last, or the best seven teams are all within 10 seconds, so very close. Today's a sprint stage as well. We do have Vollering here with Niviadoma, Rigolini. It's a pretty stacked, like, which GC riders are missing, Benji? Like, Music, I guess, is like the only one, really.
Yeah, true. And obviously, there are some riders like,
she's even here.
Yeah. And like Lippert, for example, is coming back from her injury. So that's one thing you can look at of like, okay, curious how her form will be. You've got Uther Plutwijk that isn't here yet because she's still returning from her injuries. And the most important riders are here, to the point that I actually firmly believe that Vollering will win this race with Reusser back by her side, which I think is a very important factor. Reusser had a proper injury, breaking her jaw and so forth. I don't know how influential that's been on her training abilities in the last month and so forth, to the point that I'm now curious what level she's going to be at on the climbs and so forth, because this parkour is actually hard. And the last stage, the second last stage the last stage is a really hard one. It's like, it's 90 kilometers, so it's not long, but there's two climbs in there, 14.2K, the Mortuera. We've seen this a few times in the Vuelta, I think, 6.3%, and a finish on 10 kilometers, 5.8%, Puerto de Cotos. Like, these are not 10% climbs, but reality is, difference is going to be made on this.
Yeah,
and it's definitely enough to do damage on. And I feel like we've had a few weeks now, like a week and a half, roughly, since the previous classics, to the point that by the time they hit this, I reckon Vollering will be all Gucci to destroy people here. What's your take, Rigolini?
No, I don't think the climbs are hard enough for Rigolini. Like last year, there was Covadonga, which is much harder. She had a mechanical and she was stuck in the wrong gear and she was still cooking. okay, yes, I agree that the women on 7% really can make a big difference,
yeah,
but it's still 7%. And I think it suits Nivea Doma and Vollering more than her. You also have some punchy stages. So stage five is actually 3.2Ks, 8.2% finish. I should be fine for her because actually, you know, 10 minutes plus, but
yeah, but
it's still better for Vollering and Nivea Doma than La Vinuesa. The Vinuesa finish also not that hard. Better for Vollering and Nivea Doma.
What my interest is, comparison of stage 7 compared to the 3 kilometer 8% climb you mentioned. So stage 5 versus stage 7. Stage 5 is 3 kilometers, the other one is 700 meters at roughly 7%. 700 meters at roughly 7%, that's half an uphill sprint, but hard enough to the point that the likes of Lippert and Nivea Doma come into play for the victory. Yeah. Lippert on paper is really good on this.
Lippert would be the favorite, I would say, without Ludwig. Ludwig also good on these, but she's not here.
Yeah. I'm wondering what, when you look at Nivea Doma for the 3 kilometer 8% climb, is that just too long?
No. Nivea Doma is second best climber in the world.
Depends on the parkour, I reckon.
Well, if it's a climb, she's the second best.
Because we're talking about Realini existing as well, Vollering existing. I don't know if you put them all at the foot of the Tourmalet, who comes in second? Vollering, if on paper first at peak.
Yeah. Problem is Realini, she gets tired out easily beforehand. But I take your point. On her feet, she disappointed actually a little bit. She didn't actually improve on the year before. She has her limitations. But I can't wait to watch. It's going to be a great race. I'm covering it with Daily Highlights on the Lantern Rouge YouTube channel. And I agree with Benji that really Vollering should clean this up if she's in good shape. It's a good parkour for her. And they didn't lose too much time in the TTT. She also, while we're on Vollering, she signed a deal with Nike, which is, I mean, just to let you know, like, women's cycling is in a pretty good place. Like, salaries have gone up massively. The coverage is improving compared to 5 years ago. There's now San Remo coming. There's Tour de France Femme already in it, coming up to its third year. I think it's in a really, really positive place. And there's also other riders are improving. It seems to be a deeper field. This year's been really exciting. And this is another sort of data point in that Nike are looking at Demi Vollering and saying, we would like to be on board with the Tour de France winner last year. And you can't say directly that, oh, she only got that because she won the Tour de France or because there's a women's Tour de France called the Tour de France, but it kind of hurt either. So I think things are moving in the right direction.
I think so as well. Now, there's going to be a point where we see that switch towards not just the top rider being that, but also some other endorsements of like nationalities. Like, for example, if a certain rider, the best rider in a certain country, is getting endorsements, that's the next level for me. Does that make sense? As in, first you have the top riders in the sport, then endorsements on a national level for the best riders in that region. And that's, I think, the next level in that aspect. And I think we see this in other sports. We see this in cycling. We see this in women's cycling now. I'm hoping that this expands, and I hope she gets the bag from this because it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I hope so too, and I hope there's more of that. But yeah, I wonder who will be next. Who will be the next big star in women's cycling? There's a few contenders. It could even be someone we already
but
know,
also,
like Lippert, who improves.
I think there's probably also a few that we don't necessarily see. Because, for example, I reckon Kopecky probably has like a car from a brand at this point. I vividly remember seeing an HLN article in the last few years about something like that. So there's probably riders in the peloton.
And she refuses to give Demi Vollering a lift anywhere in it.
Jesus. Talking about Kopecky, we'll get onto that now. Lotte Kopecky is skipping the Tour de France Femme. Because she prioritizes the Olympics, where the Omnium Olympics race. So, if you don't know what Olympics are, that's if you don't know what Omnium is, that's the one.
Yeah, I actually don't know. Can you explain it?
What an omnium is cyclists on track right in this little circle thingy. Like an oval is high, how I'd say it. Why the fuck am I explaining what track cycling is? Omnium is a combination of different disciplines on that track combined in one point system across those three
things. Oh, so it's like pentathlon.
Yes,
but just all
but
cycling.
Not athletics and not, and what is that, five?
Five, yeah.
I remember because I swear League of Legends had like a pentakill back in the day.
So she's doing the Omnium, cool.
Yeah. Story over.
Yeah.
Sad, I mean, for us.
Yeah, sad. Like we're not Olympic shills. So like we want people to do road races. So like, yeah, Ghana skipping classics to focus on the Olympics. Obviously, we will not endorse that.
I've been roasting the Olympics on this podcast for ever since we began.
Ban them.
Yeah.
And I also understand if you're an athlete that winning a gold medal or a medal in the Olympics is a huge deal. That goes much beyond just the cycling world.
You're saying winning a medal and so forth, but I feel like a lot of athletes also see just the opportunity of participating on the Olympics already as a very big thing for their career and might actually give up cycling races for that, which I don't know. I don't have that perspective because I'm not an athlete, but unless podcasting's a sport.
Dude, we would be so good. Podcasting Olympics. We win easily. I think people on the grind. But yeah, okay, so she's skipping the TDFF. I actually think that's, I mean, it means she will probably, there's a couple of stages she might not win, but I think actually Vollering for Vollering, that's no problem.
And Wiebes?
Oh, Wiebes is going to the tour? Yeah.
I'm guessing she will.
She's been training the house down in Girona. So yeah, she'll be climbing well, I think. We already mentioned Jai Hindley's extension with Bora. Did they put a year on that, Benji?
I just read for 2025.
Okay. They did the same thing with Martinez, no?
I don't know.
Yeah, and then it came out that he was actually extended to, he was signed for 4 years until end of 27. Also, Del Toro got extended until 2029. It makes sense. If I was UAE, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, but
before he hits the market again.
I would say it's two-sided, but it's triple-sided. First of all, like you say, UAE's side of things, yes, you wanna get this guy in your team as long as possible. He hasn't won the big shit yet, so you're not paying yourself completely empty, and his future value will probably be more than the contract that you signed for in those coming years. On the other side, from Del Toro side, you can say, okay, signing a contract to 2029 on one end gives job security until 2029. On the other end, you can see it as it might be risky because I might be more valuable than the contract in a few years. But let's be real. Depending on the money that's in this contract, this guy's life and his family's life might change. You know? Does that make sense?
Exactly. You know, you don't know what could happen or... Like, it's not going to be for 100 grand, is it? So, the extension, so...
I fucking hope so.
Yeah, you'd hope not. I mean, but... who's his agent?
I'll look it up.
It'll be Carrera. And so, yeah, it makes sense for him, but you get financial security for life, and, you know, it's also, for a UA perspective, you don't want this guy hitting the open market, and also, as you said, before he... win something really, really big, and then maybe the price goes up even more. This is the sort of thing that happens in basketball, in other sports or football or whatever, is that when you've got a talented young guy, you just lock them up forever because the chance of them, without injury, the chance of them regressing at from 20 to 25 is almost zero.
Ooh. Del Toro relies on his family and friends for representation and guidance.
Okay.
According to a GCN article from January.
Nah, on Instagram, AJ Sport, All Sports wins again. It's Carrera.
It's Carrera?
Yeah. Brother, he don't miss.
It has changed in January then. So
he don't miss.
It's good that Del Toro has an agent instead of relying on his family.
Yeah, of course. That he should have an agent. And Carrera's, you know, he's the biggest agent now. Like, it used to be maybe a Quadro. Carrera has the biggest roster now, easily. Like, he has all the young guys and all the big guys. He's taken all that market share, particularly the Italian-Spanish guys.
It also depends on the relationships that those agents have built with teams. Exactly. And the successfulness of those teams that follows afterwards, because Aquadra was Movistar, Team Sky back in the day, slash Ineos, slash EF in the end as well. But then you look at Carrera, and I see it very UAE-centered, no?
Yeah, UAE is his probably biggest team that he, you know, he's got Poggi and Del Toro. It's two of his biggest riders. So you've also, but then... Man, he's even got, I was looking at like Leo Bizio. He's a French guy on Decathlon Conti team. Big talent. Like he, I don't know, he's good. He won Giro della Lunigiana in juniors, which has been won by riders like Remco, you might have heard of.
Yeah.
And he's a French young guy. I got to look his agents. It's Carrera. How the fuck is he getting French? Like, what are the French agents doing? But I get, if you say, Benji, like, listen, I rep Pogacar Del Toro. Look at how they're doing. It's a pretty easy pitch. And he also probably go to all the races. But yeah, it's just interesting to see how that changes. But yeah, Del Toro's locked up. And the only thing, Benji, is how do you keep Ayuso, Del Toro, and Poggi happy in 2026?
Well,
these guys don't want to just win the Giro. They want to win the Tour de France.
Yes, but we don't know where they will be at that point. So we're looking at Del Toro now. Yes, he's looking very, very talented. He's showing off every race that he shows up at. But will he be that GC rider in 2 years that is on the level of Pogacar for the Tour de France? We don't know that. We can guess that he might evolve towards that, but he might also be at the level of Ayuso right now in those races, if that makes sense. Like a Basque Country winning rider, stuff like that. So it depends on that. Ayuso also needs to step up before he can really be against Pogacar in that same equation at the Tour de France. So there still needs to be progress from everyone. But on the other end, with two leaders, co-leadership, I can see that working. With three, it's starting to get very dense for the Tour de France. But I think Del Toro will still be young at that point. So he will still be in the phase where he might be riding the Vuelta or the Giro. So I'm more looking at an issue in 2027, 2028, if they all grow towards that stature.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on the personalities and how you manage them. But to date, UAE have done a really good job of that. There's no one's broken their contract. There's not even any complaining. There's not even an interview. Sometimes we'll be like, oh, those tactics were bad. But listen, how many times has there been an interview at the end of the race where, like, actually the only one was Ayuso on Bejes. It was very, very clear that he was unhappy afterwards. But apart from that, everyone seems happy and wins get shared around. So they keep managing it like that. There'd be no problem.
How long is Almeida stuck?
Almeida's the one I could see, like, because he's a bit older. He's 20, he's turning 26 this year. He's doing his first tour this year after 4 Giri. That he's going to Domestique, I think.
Giri. This man found out that the plural of Giro is Giri and is now overusing it every time.
Is it correct?
It is. It is.
Let's go. I'm erudite. I'm assimilated into Europe, sort of. But, all right. Oh, sorry. We should flash back to women's. Speaking of the TDFF, there's been some, maybe it's because of Jonathan Vorder's tweet, maybe it's because of Kadzal's performance in Liège, but ASO has announced the wildcards joining the race. Tashkent City, you may ask, who are they? It's a very good question. Basically, they're, I mean, it's a bit of a shame, to be honest. They got an automatic invite, and it's... What's they're doing the Tour de France. They got an automatic invite. They have 0 wins this year. Last year they have a 1.2 win, which is not a pro race, a stage or a one day race, and then 4 national championship wins. In 2022 they have the same, a 1.2 win. They are not a World Tour level team. They basically, they put on a load of races, Benji.
So,
you know,
the story's been around for a while now. First of all, they gained a lot of UCI points by farming the races that you'd expect in an Uzbek team like this to ride in. So the Asian continental scene, those kind of races, Uzbek championships, Sabalinskaya and Silfov in the team. Those are the kind of races that she can score points in. And that's exactly where they scored loads of points in 2023. So that exists. That's where they get points. In addition to that, we also got to keep in mind that there was a controversy, I think last year or the year before. Dan Shallis, or Global Peloton on Twitter, has done plenty of reporting on this over the last year and a half, where I think on the men's side for sure, I don't know if they did it on the women's side as well, where the Uzbek Federation hosted races that were fake and that the riders were in hotels instead, and they just made up fake results. I don't know if Tashkent City's women's professional team actually applies to that, though. So I don't know if this team benefited from that or not. That being said, I actually have no issue with this team being able to farm Asian continental and Asian national championships races by having riders from those countries. That's the same way Astana is doing it. It's part of the game. Is it playing the system? Yes, but I don't blame Tashkent for doing that. Don't blame the player, blame the game is the kind of vibe I have going on with that. And yes, are they going to be useful or are valuable at the Tour de France FAM when it comes to our entertainment? Are we going to see them a lot? Probably not. Tour Down Under, I think they were present. Strade, I didn't see them in those races. And I think there the factor is, we've got European championships, we've got Asian continental championships, we've got African continental championships. If they exist, they on paper have to award the same amount of points. Reality is that they're always going to be unequal when it comes to the quality of the starting field across those races. So there are going to be teams that can benefit from having those Asian continental championships riders in there, while European teams or European focused teams will not be able to benefit from that, but they will then be able to benefit most likely from riding 1.1 races in Belgium and France and farming those races. So it's like a counterbalance there. On one end, you'd say, yeah, they're not going to do anything for the race, so it's a shame. But on the other end, if they didn't participate in those controversy, in those made-up races and didn't benefit from that, then I don't really see the problem.
Yeah, like there's also Saint-Michel Aubert. They have their local calendar. In France, they get invited to all these sort of races. So it's not like these poor French teams or whatever have no calendar they can score points at. Is it more competitive? Yes. And listen, on Dan Charles' reporting in Cycling News, he said like some of the most problematic points got removed. So from the races in Uzbekistan, Cyprus, and they were retrospectively disqualified from the 2.2 Belgrade GP Woman Tour. So yeah, if they put all 10 riders in the Natty Champs to come top 10, like that's just is what it is, and that's the system.
Yes, but the fact that they try to benefit from those races,
yeah,
would in my head still result in a disqualification for like this election. Because remember that one team that dressed their mechanic as a rider to try and fake shit, and then everybody got suspended. I feel like if a team tries to not just play the system that exists, but tries to cheat the system that exists, is what they were doing then. Then I don't see why they deserve the spot. So there's like two sides to the story.
Yeah.
If they don't cheat the system, okay, they just played the game. If they cheated the system, and apparently according to that reporting, they try to, then I actually have an issue with it.
Yeah, and I can understand why other teams like, you know, EF Education Canada, which are a superior team, would be annoyed. That being said, if you're EF Education Canada, why haven't you scored more points than Tashkent City?
I think is the one that would have gotten it.
Really, the Spanish team? That's the Basque team?
I think so.
Anyway, the wildcard invitations went to, unsurprisingly, Arkea and Saint-Michel Mavic-Aubert, 93, also called, what's 93 in Wallonne? 93? No, in Wallonne.
Non en trois.
Thank you. EF got it, thanks to JV's lobbying on Twitter, and Lotto Destiny, and as you said, Laboral Cucha Fundaciones Euskadi. So it's there's a lot of teams going.
Oh, Laboral got it.
Yeah, they got the yeah, because
they just missed out.
They got, what's the name, Saint Esteban.
I wonder who missed out then.
Yeah, is there...
Life Plus Wahoo? Probably.
Saint Esteban might be injured. Why is she not doing La Vuelta?
I don't know.
She came eighth last year, so like she's a good rider, Saint Esteban. So yeah, I understand Laboral going. Unox, they're a world tour team, aren't they?
Yes. They're in the race.
I'm looking down the Conti teams.
I think it's Life Plus.
Yeah, Life Plus. Volker Vessels. Coop Repsol. Coop, the Norwegian team.
I always say co-op for some reason. Played too many games in my life, I think.
Yeah, I think... Did Ljubljana get it last year?
I don't think so.
I would like to have seen Bridge Lane get it because I'm Australian, or ARA Skip Capital get it.
Right. ARA in the Tour de France fun.
Well, they're better than Tashkent. Those two women's teams, two Australian women's teams, are better than Tashkent. They got like Olympic level, Raj doing the Olympics and stuff on the track.
But why didn't they farm the Oceanic Continental Championships, Mike?
Because we don't put on a UCR race every weekend. We should, because no one could get to it.
No one could check if it's real.
Yeah, but you need a minimum of 40 riders. You need a minimum of 40, I think, riders for it to count.
Mate, you can find 40 riders.
Yeah. Anyway. It is what it is. Is there any other news, Benji? Anything else we've missed around the traps? We've also got our Giro preview coming up. We didn't want to step on those toes. There was the Tour of the Gila, obviously, in America. Which, yeah, is a good American race. It occurs like average over 2,000 meters altitude. I think we've covered pretty much.
Is it still UCI?
It's 2.2.
Okay.
It's UCI, but it's not a pro race. Pretty sure. Redlands also is not a pro race. Sevilla was there. Tyler Stitz, or Stites, not sure how to pronounce it. He won GC in Gila against Medellin. And I'll leave you with one word from Alejandro Valverde, the best gravel racer in Spain. And this is going to start heating up more as we talk about it. But I think, yeah, just to refer to that article from Raul, Los putos puntos, the fucking points, is what Valverde said in a recent interview. He said the fucking points are back again, quoting him directly. Movistar are not looking good. And to remind you, for the relegation battle, Cofidis don't look good, but DSM and Arkea are scoring a lot and they're coming back into it. Movistar and Intermarché are not having good years. They are, Movistar are 18th. And Intermarché 17th in the 2024 ranking, and they're closer now to the others.
I do think that Movistar has more leverage to push for in the Grand Tours and in the 1 week race that are to come, because Mas has not been horrible either. He's been 15th.
He looked good
in
Romandy for Mas.
6th in Romandy. So if he can stay consistent in races like Dauphiné, yeah, whatever he's doing, Tour de France, Vuelta, like if he consistently in a top 10, then on paper, I reckon that will do a lot.
Waar van Heiluwe.
People fucking laughed at you.
Waar van Heiluwe. Waar.
Waar van Heiluwe.
Waar van Heiluwe.
Yeah.
Easy.
Van Heiluwe is not a great name in Flanders, to be honest. I swear, one of those pedo priests back in the day was called Van Heerlo in Flanders.
Jesus. poor guy. Well, But on Mars, I mean Wara. The to be associated with that, as you said. But the learning more about Flanders. What is it? Is it like a? Does it mean anything? The name, you know, like what is that name? Like, can when you look at a name, Benji, can you tell that's a West Flanders name? That's an Antwerp name? Like, is there things like that?
It's hard to decipher whether it's from this province or this province in Flanders. But if it's Flemish sounding, it's in Flanders. Otherwise, it's in Wallonia. That's the notable difference between the two. But then you've got the
Van
problem
Eetveld,
that
you can't tell where he's from.
Van Eetveld is from Flanders. I don't know what area
he's from
his name.
What about Philippe Gilbert?
Eetveld means eat field.
Eat the field?
Eat field.
Okay. But yeah, you're right on Enric Mas. He, you know, even like in the Grand Tours, they changed the point system. If he comes fourth, fifth, not in GC, even in stages, not winning the mountaintop sprints, but just there or thereabouts, you actually get a lot of points for that. So Movistar should, they'll be hoping kick back up. But certainly the points are back, and that's going to be something that's going to become, especially the second half of this year, a lot of teams are going to start focusing on the points a lot, even in advance of next year. So they're back, and we'll keep you updated periodically on those points. But hope you enjoy the weekly show. Stay tuned for a big Giro preview tomorrow. Benji's going to say Pogacar can't win, so you have to tune in.
Wait.
Yeah, exactly. That's forecasting what he might say. So we'll see you with that on probably Wednesday morning if we have all the teams announced by then. But until then, ciao.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.